Mkhatsho chisa pe Mpumalanga yokana iRise FM sithokoza khulu nohana siya thokoza well lo chisa nohana siya thokoza kuzingisa chiro kamsana no wandile mazibuko hlelweni labo lezomnotho taking care of business. Yeah, definitely one of those conversations. If you want to buy a house, I'm sure you've had there the conversation. I'm really, really inspired. Good evening. Welcome to Rise FM in 60 Minutes. Ibizo lami nguMusa wakaSikhosana. On tonight's show, like every past Tuesday we've been doing, I'm joined by our good friends from the National Treasury. They're going to help us understand and even simplify the processes of doing business with government this evening. And tonight is no different because Ms. Rakgadi Motseto, she is definitely my guest this evening. She is also the Chief Director in Stakeholder and Client Management there at the National Treasury. We're going to look at a various number of issues this evening, and there are definitely procurement methods that we have left out last week. And this evening, we're going to touch on them, and then we'll definitely converse a bit further. If you have any questions or comments, I invite you to do so. Number 072-885-7702. Number on Twitter at RiseFM943. Good evening. Lochani Agwande. Lichoni Lilangesi, eSouth Africa.
This is Rise FM in 60 Minutes with Musa Skosana.
As promised, my guest joins me now on the line. Ms. Rakgadi, very good evening to you. I'm so excited to be speaking to you yet again.
Makani, Rise FM. Good evening, Musa. Thank you so much for having me again.
You know, we've been simplifying our chats, particularly in just processes of doing business with government. You know, for the past couple of weeks, I mean, we've touched on a number of issues or even topics, you know. But I'd like us to recap, maybe, you know, as we recap, and I'd also like us to cover some of those procurement methods that we might have left out last week. A few of them, we'll definitely be unpacking them a bit later on in the show. But, you know, since we have left out a number of items there, you know, let's somewhat recap into what we've dealt with last week and look at some of the outliers there. You know, last week we dealt, we dealt with, you know, the deviation. You know, kindly remind us there, you know, going to tear in a deviation when it comes to just procuring or just even doing business with government.
Okay, thank you so much. On the deviations last week, it is a method that we apply, especially under emergency, as you would notice now, during the state, the national disaster, we usually adopt what we call deviations. But what needs to happen is that when you adopt deviation as a method of procurement, you need to make sure that internal processes like your approval by your accounting officers and the CFO possibly are done before you even go out to procure. So it gives the institution a quick turnaround time, so you cut the process short to make sure that you are responsive to the emergency that the province is facing. You don't have to advertise for 21 days and expect people to come and drop in their proposals, especially where they don't even have houses, they've lost a lot of things, the roads are not as drivable. So you try and do it in a quicker turnaround time, but you still have to comply with the constitution as well to make sure that the process is going to be as fair as possible and then competitive, so that everybody who can provide you with a service can respond in time. So you don't have to go to one supplier unless that supplier is a sole provider of that service. They will give you what we call a letter to make sure to confirm that they are the original equipment manufacturer, and possibly if there is a company that has been appointed maybe in Mpumalanga to be the distributor, then they will have that data from the OEM to say, like, this is the only distributor in Mpumalanga who can give you this service or this commodity that we have manufactured. So you need to put those processes in place to make sure that you still comply. And when it comes to an audit, you don't have a negative finding as well.
But also last week we touched on the panel of service providers.
Yes. So the panel of service providers, especially now, it will come in very handy if they did have a panel of service providers, like for maintenance. Maybe you have buildings that will require a lot of maintenance. What you will do, you will advertise for those services, and then you take them through an evaluation process through all the committees but you don't award, you put them on the panel because you don't know the scale of work that they will have to be called to do at that time. So when you get that emergency, maybe you want them to come and fix a burst pipe, you have to pick on that panel and say, look, we have a burst pipe, we need a turnaround time of these days or maybe 24 hours, and they must come and view the damage and then give you the quotations, and then you can work from there. But the panel is just to have people you can go to as soon as possible if you need them, but they still need to be reflected as well on the CSD, because on the panel you put them based on their competencies. You have really assessed their competencies, they qualify, you can use them, but you still have to evaluate them on the last phases of price and then have them adjudicated as well before you award them the work that they need to do.
Yeah, but also last week, you know, quite an interesting, you know, concept I've heard you share, that one of limited bidding or even closed bidding.
Yes, the closed bidding or limited bidding, it's closed or limited. Let's use the word limited.
Yeah.
Simply meaning that you have a limited number of suppliers that you can use. You just go and check with the regulating body how many cell phone service providers do we have in the country that can give you a full service if you want to use them for government. Mm-hmm. Then they will tell you it's MTN, it's Vodacom, it's Telkom, it's Cell C, and then I'm not sure other ones. So you will only send the RFQ to those ones, because those are the only ones that are going to respond. Otherwise, you can advertise it just to make sure there's transparency and for everybody, all the taxpayers, to know that we have advertised, this is what we are seeking to buy or procure as government. But if at all, you can still approach them and you can still advertise it just for transparency. So we call it a closed bidding because you know the companies that are going to respond for that particular service. But if you advertise and get a new one, you still have to allow them in because it's a competitive bidding still. So it's when you know the suppliers that are going to respond and they are not as many, then you can use a closed bidding or limited bidding method.
Now that we have touched on what we have shared last week, let's look at some of the outcasts of those or even procurement methods that we've left last week. You know, still on the procurement methods, you know, last week we left out unsolicited bid or proposals.
Last week we left the RFQ.
Sure.
Because I said it touches on the schemes as well. And I said for us to choose a particular method of procurement, we are guided by the thresholds in terms of monetary value. In the municipalities, it's between 1 rand until 200,000. And for PFMA complying institutions like your national departments and provinces, as well as state-owned entities, it will be between 200,000 as well until 1 million rand. So suppliers shouldn't be allowed as much, but they still need to be careful when they receive the request for quotations, because we have increased the threshold to 1 million rand now, meaning that they might get a request for quotation to the value of 1 million rand. So what happens with this particular, that's when you see a lot of fake scams that are coming through using the RFQ method, because with the tender, once you advertise a fake tender, people are going to know about it. The department that has been put on the letterhead is going to respond to that. So they hardly use the open and competitive method to scam people. They just go for the quick ones where it comes into your email and then you respond to that. So it is important that they know these thresholds. Also with the RFQs within the institutions, they still have to apply the principles of the Constitution as well to make sure that the process is fair to all the suppliers that have been invited from the CSD as well. And then it is competitive. And then they need to follow all the processes and the policies that they have internally in terms of who's supposed to evaluate what they have. And then they're part of it to make sure that the criteria that has been, or maybe the specification that was sent out, all the suppliers who responded were evaluated against that specific specification and nothing else.
Mm.
So for in terms of the scams when it comes to the RFQs, it is important that suppliers need to understand these particular thresholds, because in the municipalities it's 200,000 downwards. It's difficult to change it through an instruction note because it's in the Act, which is in the PFMA, whereas in the PFMA it's not prescribed in the Act. It is prescribed through the instruction note, so it is easier to change. So when responding to the RFQs, it is important that you make sure that it is something that you have registered for on the CSD and you are familiar with the commodity on the industry, just to make sure that we don't provide you with a photo, because most of the RFQs that are fake, they come with photos, they come with branding, and they tell you that it should be this brand, this is the photo, this is where you're supposed to go and source it and deliver it to this particular department or SOE. So they need to understand this threshold so that they don't fall foul for these fake RFQs.
Mm-hmm. You know, still on that topic of RFQs, you know, is it then now the right time that you and I should start talking about, you know, request for information, the RFIs?
Yes. The RFIs, they fall under what we call competitive bids, because the competitive bids is those that we advertise publicly. You know, they fall within the outside the threshold of 10,000 and above. You advertise 1 million and 100 you advertise. And so those are competitive bids. They will go out on publicly. We advertise them either on the e-tender bulletin, on the tender bulletin, or on the e-tender portal. But the benefit with the e-tender portal is that we upload even the documents that you need to fill. You don't have to go to the institution to collect the documents. You can just download them yourself and print them, and then that's when you will go and drop them off. So with a competitive bid, what is more important is that the closing time is very important when you're dealing with competitive bids. If they say they're closing at 12, please make sure you're there at 12, because at 12 they're taking away the tender book.
Mm.
It's not 12 overseas, it's 12 here. We call it 12 Telkom Telkom time.
Mm.
If it's 12, make sure that your submission or your proposal is in the box by 12, because once they close, they will take it through. You can come in. And then when they open the tent, you can be present just to for them to read out all the suppliers who have made it on time. And also there's something that is called the briefing session.
Sure.
If the process is new to you as a supplier, usually, or maybe it's too technical, what institutions will do, they will make the briefing session mandatory just to make sure that suppliers know what is expected from them, so that they, when they put their proposals together, they respond to exactly what the institution is asking for. So if it's mandatory, please make sure you attend and you sign the attendance register as well. And also, even if it's not mandatory and you are new to the environment, you can go to the briefing session. That's where you get an opportunity to ask questions in terms of the criteria that you have seen already on the tender documents, just for clarification. When you say this, what do you mean? And then it will help you better prepare your proposal before you submit to the institution.
Yes.
So under the RFI, because we have to advertise it as well, it falls under that category, although we don't use it to award. We're just saying requesting information from the suppliers. Maybe we're entering into a different industry or sector that we're not familiar with. What we do, we issue what we call a request for information so that the industry can respond and say, look, this is how you package this particular commodity or service, so that we don't end up when we do our specifications putting the requirements way too stringent, that we exclude most of the suppliers, and then you end up with one supplier who can give you that particular requirement. So it helps us a lot, because Once you get that feedback from different suppliers or role players in that industry, then you can map out your specifications accordingly, knowing very well that, okay, for the work that I want these potential suppliers to do, doesn't require a particular certification. They can still do it because at this level, it's not that risky. However, if it's bigger, then these are the requirements in terms of certification, quality control that they need to put in place. Then you know that when you put your specification together, those are the things, the requirements that you're going to put with that specification. So you don't award using that particular process. You're just requesting information just to make sure that your specifications, when you issue a tender, there would be that amount of suppliers who can respond to your tender, and also just to get the new development as well within that industry to make sure that we tend to improve what we are procuring as well.
Mm. You know, Sister Khadi, there's something that we've had here in the province of Mpumalanga where service providers are alleging the fact that, you know, even post the closure of a certain maybe tender process, maybe let's talk of the tender, the box itself, even post that 12 o'clock that is set, other service providers are still able to submit their bids. I mean, is that even accepted within the processes of how Treasury works?
Now, that is irregular to include somebody who came after the closing date. Mm. It's like when you advertise a position and you say the closing date is Friday, and after closing date you don't take anything else, you know, because you have to go and record everything that you receive. That is why we encourage suppliers to be present when that tender box is open, because they have to read aloud all the suppliers whose proposals come from that particular box, right? Mm. So meaning that suppliers can make notes at least that, okay, in this box we are 14. These are the companies that I'm competing against.
Mm.
If at all it happens that they realize that they have awarded to somebody whose name was not read during the process, then that is irregular. That can be reported to the provincial treasury as well as the auditor general for that process to be halted before we incur cost estimate.
If you just joined into the conversation this evening, my guest is Mr. Khadi Motsetho, the stakeholder and client management chief director in the National Treasury. She's helping us understand the processes of government that are now simplified, and she's sharing, you know, some of the lookouts in if you want to do business with government, and if you are already and you're wondering why certain things haven't been going your way, and she's definitely sharing now that you know, there are things called requests for information, and you know, definitely an eye-opener if you are in the business. But Sister Khadi, I'd like us to talk about the transversal contracts. What are those? And, you know, what are they, I suppose, what purpose are they serving?
The transversal contract is another method of procurement that is competitive. It has to be advertised for a minimum of 21 days, as you say. So what happens is that we issue letters or maybe requests to organs of state that are using, for instance, uniform to say, look, as the Treasury, we can put together a transversal contract so that all the institutions like your health, correctional services, your police, your military, because they are using uniforms, your shoes, then we pull them together and say, look, come together, let's look at your specification so that you issue one tender for government, then they will procure from that one. It's a sort of a collective buying to make sure that government gets those benefits in terms of discounts, because if the volumes are bigger, then it's easier for us to negotiate the discounts. We have a lot of commodities and the transversal contracts. We have your uniforms. We have cars. We have medical equipment as well. Your masks are there. There's a lot of them. Your condoms are there. Your body bags. Your biohazard bags. So you'll have what we call transversal contracts for health equipment, health medicines, your ARVs, and then you'll have uniforms. You'll have cars. So that as government, we don't issue multiple tenders for one commodity and then we are charged different prices. So what happens is that because it uses what we call bid committees, then those departments, they're going to form the bid specification committee. They bring their specifications for the cars. The police will say, we are what we're looking for Toyota Hiluxes of this functionality, this capacity, petrol consumption, maybe motor plan, if at all it is built in. And also we have to have a transversal contract for tires as well. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have another department that will come. In our case, we don't want complex cars. We just want cars that are just small. That will help us for our employees if they have to travel to meetings, they can use those. So they will take all those specifications and then put together one specification with different streams of cars that they want as the whole government. Then they will advertise that. They will get the distributors to participate as well as the manufacturers, but the specifications will be the same. And once that is done, the second group will come from those departments to come and form the what we call the evaluation committee that we'll talk to later on. They will evaluate the process. They will award for different, let's say they will award the tender for cars for different categories of cars so that if any institution is looking for a bantam bucky, they can go to the transversal and procure it from there. Using the discounted rates for government. So there's a lot of commodities that you find under transversal contracts, and most of them, those are the ones that are very complex, because if you look at the scams that we are seeing, most of those items are already on the transversal contract. Mm. So suppliers can participate in those, but the commodities are very complex. They require a lot of testing, a lot of compliance, so they can explore that as well. If they are into manufacturing or distribution of complex commodities.
Yeah, that one is clear. Now, let me see if this one is also clear. You know, what's the difference between the request for proposal and the request for quotation?
The proposal is a tender.
Okay.
You bring a proposal, it's a competitive bid.
Yeah.
The quotation is a quotation that give us a quotation on this.
Okay.
And then you give us a quotation, it's below 1 million. Mm. The request for proposal is what we call a tender, as in tender to tender. And that is advertised.
Oh. Okay.
There's no other way to do that. It's called a tender, request for proposal. Mm. What we do, we advertise it for a minimum of 21 days. Mm. And then you find it on the tender bulletin, your newspapers, as well as the e-tenders portal. Mm. So it will be out for 21 days. Some institutions, because the process might be complex, they will advertise for over 21 days. But if you want to advertise for less than 21 days, already it falls into what we call a deviation. So you have to get the approval because you're deviating from the normal process. Mm. So what happens with the RFPs, we call them the RFPs, request for proposals. That's why we advertise for 21 days. So any supplier who is on the CSD, they have a choice to participate in this particular process. We don't have to select them from the CSD. Mm-hmm. We say, look, it's open for everybody. If you think you have the capacity to deliver on this thing, just submit your proposal. You're going to be evaluated on this particular criteria. Through it, it will be handled by what we call the bid committee structure. So for 21 days, you have this. And that is why I said in the beginning, I think in the first week, it is important for suppliers to follow through in terms of the information that they get from the SONA, the SOPA, so that they know whether this information is going to translate into this RFPs at some point. And also the information will be reflected on the procurement plans before they translate into any of these competitive bids, like your RFPs, your deviations, your transversal contracts. Then it helps them to be ready in terms of your compliance, your certificate, knowing very well that I've seen on the procurement plan that they are going to advertise for these services in the second quarter of the financial year. What do I need to put in place? I must go and get my certificate. If I'm in construction, I must go to labor and get the COIRA certificate. If it's a product that needs to be tested, I have to go to SANAS and get the testing results so that when this tender comes out, I have those certificates ready. Then I can respond to the tender.
Mm. If you just joined into the conversation on Rise FM in 60 minutes, Mkhatshwa Chisapé, Mpumalanga Yokana. The burning conversation is that one we're having with the chief director of the National Treasury, Ms. Rakgadi Motsepe, on simplifying the processes of doing business with government. And she's my guest this evening. We'll take this breather, and I invite you to dial in the number 072-885-7702 or 013-757-0096 in case you'd like to probe in or ask any question around, you know, the simplification of the processes of the, of doing business with government. If you have done business with government before and you've encountered challenges, Ms. Rakgadi is here. She's from the National Treasury. She's going to help you understand and also guide you through as to which are some of the steps then you need to take for you to be able to have that, query resolved. And you're on Rise FM in 60 minutes. When we return, we'll definitely take your voice notes on 072-885-7702.
You're listening to Rise FM.
Tying the opinions into a single narrative. Rise FM in 60 minutes with Musa Skosana.
Just joined us. It has just gone a minute after 8. You're on Rise FM in 60 minutes. My guest is Ms. Rakgadi Motsepe. She is the chief director in the National Treasury. We are talking around simplification of the processes of doing business with government. And tonight we're looking also into various number of issues such as subcontracting and, you know, the preferential regulations and also localization. Ms. Rakgadi, I've touched on them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into them, I suppose. You know, I've always been curious as to when we talk of the preferential regulations, you know, I understand that in 2017, that's when they became, you know, effect or maybe that's when, you know, they were enacted in 2017. But, you know, talk us through then, you know, when such was enacted. Were there provisions in the Constitution that allowed the targeted previously disadvantaged individuals to be accommodated in this front? Yeah.
Yes. If I think it's Chapter 13 of the Constitution, General Finance Matters. If you go to Section 217 of the Constitution, you will find that Section 2172 of the Constitution talks to the preference that we need to give to categories of people, of persons that were previously disadvantaged on the basis of race, as well as gender and disability. So if you look at those sections, that's what, together with Section 3 of 217, it gives effect to the Triple PFA Act of 2000, where it outlines exactly what is it that we're talking about when you're talking about preference, meaning that we have to consider the RDP goals as well when we determine which groups we are going to, or the empowerment goals that we want to factor in when we empower the previously discriminated against groups. So because we trade or transact with companies, then those companies have to be owned by those categories of people. So in 2017, what we did, we reviewed or revamped the regulations that we had from 2011, and then we brought in the element of pre-qualification as well as what is the other one? I forget. So once you have that, or subcontracting as well. Mm. So we had a long list of criteria that you can use to give effect to Section 2172 of the Constitution, mm, as well as the Special PFA. However, in 2018, when we were taken to court because of the pre-qualification criteria as well as the subcontracting element of it, mm, then the ruling of 16 February came into being. However, excuse me, irrespective of the ruling of 16 February this year, we still have the Triple PFA Act that still says or prescribes that we need to give effect to Section 217, mm, of the Constitution, right? Now, if at all, because we don't have the thresholds in prescribed through the regulations, they're still under consideration in terms of public comments. We have given through the Act itself, the institution were given an option of applying for exemption to the minister. So the minister exempts you from the Act, then you have to use your own internal policy to give effect to the Constitution itself, mm, so that you don't drop the constitutional requirement to go and empower a category or give preference, mm, to categories of these people and their businesses. But the challenge that we have, we tend to have this confusion in terms of the use of concept. You have people say, no, you give preference. Some say, no, you don't support transformation. But if you go to the dictionary, you'll realize that these are two different concepts, right? And, mm, if you go through the Act, the element of transformation is not there. Mm. But if you go to the PFMA and the MFMA, you will find transformational requirements in the two acts. Mm. So it's not like if you issue the regulations as they were issued, then you are not supportive of transformation. Mm. However, the thing is we have to comply with the Constitution, because the Constitutional Court never said that the regulations were irregular or unconstitutional. Sure. They only said that they shouldn't have been issued to that extent by the Minister of Finance, because the Triple PFA on Section 2-1, they give that function of issuing policies on preference, mm, to the organs of state. Then we included it in the regulation. So that was the context, that it shouldn't have been in the regulations. It was supposed to be sitting, mm, with the policies of those organs of state. So we still have a constitution. We are not dropping the ball in terms of preference.
Yeah. Maybe on that front, still on maybe the previously disadvantaged individuals, are there mechanisms of, you know, how one could deal with businesses or even owners who are fronting for other racial groups?
It's it's something that has to be monitored by the DTIC, the BBBE Commission.
Yeah.
It should be within their domain, because the Act and the policy is their policy. Mm. Our policies is the three policies, is the PFMA, the MFMA, as well as the Triple PFA.
Yeah.
And the Constitution is for everybody. We have to comply with it. Mm. So when it comes to the BBBE fronting transformation, it's the domain of the DTIC.
Sure.
Together with the BBBE, and it will be far, will be reaching in terms of scope, mm, if we have to, you know, prescribers to how they should deal with it.
Sure. You know, let's talk about then localizations or even buying local. You know, when we talk of buying local, you know, sometimes there seems to be a sense that, you know, officials, particularly those operating in municipalities, they ring fence, you know, the specifications per municipality or even a province. Kindly talk us through there. What is then the correct narrative when we say Treasury is looking into localization or even buying local?
It is still not in the acts that we mandate or we're responsible for.
Sure.
If those are in what we call RDP goals, if you look at the RDP, it will tell you how do you deal with a local economic empowerment or economic generation within that particular municipality or area. But the one thing is that you need to strike a balance when you do certain things, because you don't want to discriminate against South Africans, because we are all governed by the Constitution, and within the Constitution, if you look at the Bill of Rights, people have every right to trade and transact wherever they want to transact.
Yeah.
So if you're going to ring fence and discriminate against other people outside those boundaries of that municipality, then it's going to be a little bit tricky for those in that particular municipality next time when there's a tender in another municipality or in another province for them to participate, because those ones are going to say, no, you kept your tenders for your people, so we are doing it for our people as well. So it tends to bring those boundaries of discrimination again into the procurement space.
Mm.
So that's what we need to be mindful of, so that we don't go against the Constitution and we violate other people's rights and say, you can't transact in that municipality, because tomorrow you move to that municipality, you buy a house there, and then you come from another municipality. Does it mean where you moved from, you can't go back and transact there? So they need to be very, very careful with the specifications, just to make sure that they don't violate people's rights in terms of freedom of speech.
When we talk then of subcontracting, you know, normally there's, you know, there's 30% stipulated there that, you know, you're subcontracting 30%, or I don't know. I mean, you know, talk us through there. Is it worth of work or money in the pocket, that 30%?
They're no longer applicable, the 2017 regulations.
Yeah.
They have rendered invalid, so it didn't add valid for us to talk about the subcontracting, because those were in the 2017 regulations and they have fallen away as a result of that constitutional court ruling. So it would be fruitless for us to talk about the 2017 regulations when we can't apply them anymore.
Sure. No, I hear you.
Yeah.
10 minutes after 8, if you're on Rise FM in 60 minutes, you want to probe into the conversation I'm having with the Chief Director, that is, Ms. Rakgadi Motseto. She is my guest this evening. We're talking about simplifying the process of doing business with government. I invite you to send in your comments or questions, compliments. And if you'd like to compliment her as well, I'm sure she would definitely like to hear some of those coming from the province of Mpumalanga. The number to dial, 072-885-7702. You can hear her giggle there in the background, Mpumalanga, I suppose. Ms. Rakgadi, I believe we have a voice note, and I'm going to try and get, our producer here to just convey it to you.
Okay. Hey, Rise FM, as someone who's looking into getting into working with the government, I wanted to find out if it is advisable to subcontract. What exactly are the advantages of being a subcontractor or of subcontracting?
Yeah, that seems to be somewhat bothering there on that thing we are running away from. Yeah, yeah.
We no longer have it prescribed in our regulations because it's one of the mandates that will fall under the institutions if they want to use subcontracting.
Sure.
to really make sure that particular sector is transformed. They can do that, but we can't prescribe it from our side through the regulations, which is something that suppliers need to understand, that the 2017 regulations are no longer applicable as of the 16th of February. That is why we issued the new ones, and the public comments closed already. At the moment, we are considering all the comments just to test them against the law, to make sure that we don't find ourselves in court again. So the subcontracting element is the decision of the organs of state to use it or not to use it. It's not something that we can prescribe to them.
072-885-7702. Let's take more of your reaction.
Good evening. My question is, why do the Transvaal contracts for small items take time to be released? Because I do most of my work in the health sector. I am Dom Gaisa in Gauteng, streaming live. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, that's what, this one seems to be your neighbor there, Sis Rachel.
You see, now they want to listen in Mpumalanga and then you want to issue specifications and say we don't want people in South Day. I'm not sure. I couldn't hear the other part about the first part about the contrasting of commodities or something.
Yeah, I think she was touching on, you know, something we've touched on earlier. Let me the transversal contracts. I mean, she's talking about why is it taking too long to be released. I don't understand there, but I'm sure you'd be at a better position to understand the question. Yeah.
Remember, I did say that when we choose a method of procurement, you have to look at the administrative burden that you will have. You can choose to advertise what we call for items for stationery and put these suppliers with their items on a contract for 3 to 5 years. So you don't have to advertise frequently for suppliers who can supply you with paper. So the same with transversal contracts. We don't issue a contract for 1 year because it takes a lot of administrative work to put together a contract. So what you do, you appoint suppliers for, I mean, maybe a minimum of 3 years and then a minimum of 5 years, and then they will be rendering that service for that period. And then thereafter, when the contract is about to last, maybe in the last year, you start working then on the new proposals, your specifications, and then you advertise a new tender so that when this old contract lasts, then you have awarded a new contract for a longer period. Mm. So they don't take longer. It's just that they award and then they indicate that the contract will be for 3 years and then they will only advertise again after 3 years. Mm.
You're on Rise FM in 60 minutes. We are also opening our lines, 013-757-0096. If you'd like to also, converse with Osis Rakhari, she is my guest this evening from the National Treasury. On 072-885-7702 is our WhatsApp line. You're more than welcome to also send in your comments. Let's take more of your reaction.
Musa, so I hear that you and your guests are talking about processes, but we all know that, you know, the allocation process of tenders is kind of corrupt in a way because there's already people who are guaranteed those tenders. So what is the National Treasury doing to ensure that there's no corruption in the allocation processes of tenders?
Srahari?
I think it's a bit unfair to say we all know. Maybe she knows.
Yeah.
Not everybody knows. And if you know that there is corruption, there are processes that you need to follow to report that particular corruption. Mm. The thing is, I think when we're going to be talking about the bid process, and it's important that as a supplier, you don't work on assumption because within public procurement, you have to have facts. You cannot work on assumption because you failed at a particular process, the tender was not awarded to you, and then you start making allegations of corruption. So it's unfair to those who are putting in effort in the process to make sure that they meet the requirements, and then they really push too hard to make sure that when they are awarded, they do the work as they should. So to say that we all know it's really, really unbased. It's not fair to those who do the hard work to really get the tenders or go through the process in a fair manner.
Let's take more of the voice note before maybe we jump on to another part of the conversation. 072-885-7702.
Hi, Musa. So I have a question. Why does the DTI want us to submit the SBD6 form?
Okay. The ladies have come on too heavy this evening. Zarkhari?
remember, it's the DTI in terms of their local content. They need to monitor whether the how much are we importing from other countries. How much are we manufacturing? Because one of the requirements that we need to push through transformation is to make sure that we don't procure most of our commodities externally or from overseas. We manufacture them here. But it's something that was raised in terms of the commodities that don't require those SPD forms, and that's something that we are reviewing at the moment to make sure that we separate, we differentiate the different SPD forms as to where are they going to be applicable. If it's something that needs to be manufactured, then it will be applicable there. If it's something that doesn't have manufacturing element, it shouldn't be applied there. If it's the industry that require a lot of transformation and to make sure that we really capacitate it, then it will have a different packaging of SPD forms, not that they should be applying across the board. And unfortunately, it's their process. We don't have control over it. But now with the new regulations, we are looking at the SPD forms as well in terms of whether they need to be part of certain commodities that we are procuring or not. So a lot of requirements are going to change, or the documents are going to change as a result of this particular constitutional court ruling. So we have to look at our SPD forms as well.
Gents, I invite you as well to come on this evening. I mean, we've had a lot of the ladies ask us this evening on 072-885-7702. I'd like to hear from the gents. You know, is it easy to do business with government, particularly in the province or even in other states, or in the nation's, departments that you transact with? Is it easy? What are some of the contentious issues there that you constantly find and you'd need Sis Rakhari to, help you on them? 072 is the number, 885-7702. Sis Rakhari, earlier you mentioned about, the speed committees. I understand that they've been put together, and, what is their role in the public procurement? Let's start with maybe the...
Okay, before we get to the speed committees, let me just touch on what we call unsolicited speed.
Okay, sure.
Because we have majority of suppliers offering a particular solution to the organs of state. We call it unsolicited because we didn't ask for it. And what happens in that space is that it has to do with systems and innovation most of the time. So what we say to suppliers, if at all you come up with an idea, make sure that you protect it through the Intellectual Property Act, and make sure you have those copyrights, your trade secrets are protected, because you might think that this is an innovation for you. You are the first person to do it, to bring it to government. And before we even accept it, we have to check if this idea has not been offered somewhere else. If at all it has been registered by somebody else, we might as well just advertise it and see how many people have modified that solution for us to do it, if at all we are interested in buying that solution. Otherwise, we can decline an unsolicited bid because we don't serve us. Because I remember in one of the campaigns, another lady says, I have developed a system for cyber security. And I'm like, look, but who's supposed to buy cyber security systems in government? And she didn't know. And also, is she the only one who has developed it?
Yeah.
Is there somebody who has registered this as a copyright or trade secret? We don't know. Because once we advertise, you might find that somebody will raise a hand and say, you're advertising my copyright or something that I've trademarked already. So we don't want to find ourselves in that legal tussle. So it is important that with any innovation, they must just check whether they are the first one to do it and register it, and just to make sure they're safe and they continue to generate income from it and get benefits from it.
You know, that one is very important because, often people, go to, various entities of government and then they pitch an idea. Then they wonder why sometimes, certain projects get to be carried out without them, because some of them have not even hinted at the idea. Yeah.
And if that is the case and you haven't protected it in terms of the intellectual property, you cannot come back and say, I came with this solution and you took it and used it. You don't own it. You don't own it. You shared it. We decided to use it the other way or 2 years later.
Yeah.
So you can't come back and claim it, because right now you have to make sure it is protected.
Yeah.
So with the bid committee,
sure.
When we advertise all the competitive bids, we take them through what we call the bid specification, like I said in the beginning, that will make sure that they determine or structure what we want to buy in what form to make sure that if we say we're looking for a car, what kind of a car are we looking for?
Mm.
How should it function? You know, how are we going to make sure it functions the way we want it to? How are we going to measure it? Right? So the Bid Specification Committee is going to detail the criteria that we're going to use to make sure we evaluate you against the specifications that we're going to advertise. It can be a project manager if at all the tender is not complicated. Like in my case, I can just put together and say, look, this is what I want to see at the end. These are the experiences that I want. These are the certifications that I'm looking for and all those kind of things. And then once it's done, together with the supply chain managers, they will look at the policy requirements, such as your preferences, your briefing sessions. If they're required, they can include them, your closing dates and times, and also what is mandatory. Is it necessary to make it mandatory? Because if you make it too tight or too a lot of mandatory requirements, you might end up with the suppliers who are less. Maybe you have one and you can't proceed with that supplier and evaluate. So you have to make sure that when you put the specifications together, you don't make them exclusionary to a point that certain suppliers cannot participate in. Right? And once that is advertised for 21 days and it closes, and we have the responses or the proposals from suppliers.
Yeah.
You have a new committee that is the Bid Evaluation Committee. Their work is just to evaluate the proposals that they have against the criteria that is in the specifications. If you're saying we need a company that has 3 to 5 years, and for experience of 3 to 5 years, we're giving you 1 point. That's how they should apply that criteria and through the evaluation. Once they're done, they will tell you all their points and check which of the suppliers have made the threshold that we have put forward. Maybe the threshold is 60% of the points, and then make a recommendation based on the points of the thresholds, and then then SCM will calculate even the preference and then the price, and then the report will be put together in terms of this is the supplier that we are recommending, looking at the criteria and what they have submitted. And then it goes to what we call the Bid Adjudication Committee. It's a new team of committee members. What they do, they don't give any points, they don't evaluate at all. What they do is to review the work that has been done by the evaluation committee to make sure that no supplier was unfairly treated in the process. If at all, you have 3 suppliers with the same amount of experience and the points that they should be getting is 1, then all of them, do they get 1 or not? If at all the other one got 2, then the BAC, the adjudication committee, can send back the report and say, have a look at this evaluation again, because there are so many discrepancies. So the adjudication committee will look at those, the fairness, the competitiveness, whether the calculations are okay, whether the recommendations are okay, because when you evaluate, you have to make comments as the bid evaluation member that I'm giving them 2 because of 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sure.
I'm giving them 1 because of 1, 2, 3, 4. So once it's with the bid adjudication committee, they will look at your report, the evaluation committee report, and then they will have to write their own report as well. So their own report is either it will go to the accounting officer recommending that they should make an award to this particular company. If at all within the delegations of responsibilities through their policies, they have been given the powers to make the award, then they will make the award, but they will still have to have that report as a backing to motivate their decision. And once that is done, it will go to supply chain, and then it will go to, we publish it again on the e-tenders in terms of what were the scores for this top 3 maybe. We take the top 3, we publish them and say, look, these are the top 3 that make the threshold, and this is the one that we have appointed. These were the points that were allocated to them. So you have those 15 kind of committees that will have to check on each other's work. So if it gets to the BEC and they find it very, very difficult to evaluate the criteria that is there, chances are that the tender has to be cancelled because the criteria has been advertised already. You can't change it after you have advertised it. Mm. So if it's difficult to use the criteria as advertised by the BEC, the whole tender has to be cancelled because you cannot change the criteria and disadvantage other suppliers who could have submitted their tenders as well.
Mm. Wow. Sister Rakhadi, no, before we wrap up, you know, I'd like us to quickly recap, you know, remind us again, you know, why is it important for suppliers or even, you know, those who want to do business with government to look out for the SONA, the SOPA, you know, the tabling of the budget speech as well?
Firstly, government, doing business with government is not an easy thing as everybody thinks. There's a lot of preparation that suppliers say. Yeah. It's not as easy as people would think. There's a lot of information that they need to consume. There's a lot of information that they need to interrogate, because if they don't do that, their reaction to the tender is going to show. It's like preparing for your exam tonight and you're writing tomorrow. You're going to mess it up. Mm-hmm. If at all you knew that you're going to write an exam because they gave you a timetable. Sure. In our case, we have given you a procurement plan, and then we have given you the SONA in terms of the priorities that this is the industry that we're going to be working on, infrastructure, and then we have to make sure that our SMEs are supported. So those priorities already, you have been told about them. If you don't pay attention to them, it's like you're going to write an exam, having studied the night before and the exam is tomorrow. So if they know which direction we're going in terms of our plans as government, they then can get their ducks in a row, getting their certifications ready, making sure they decide which industry they're going to participate in, because you cannot decide this morning or tomorrow that I'm going to be in the infrastructure industry and you don't even have a clue what the CIDB grading has to do with what. Mm. It's impossible. Mm. So we're doing this so that they need to understand that doing business with government is not an easy thing. You have to prepare yourself the same way those who are in universities are preparing, to make sure that the day that they come, they are ready. So that is why we are doing it.
Remind us again, you know, what sort of mistakes, you know, as the National Treasury, do you constantly encounter when, you know, suppliers are registering and changing their information on the CSD?
The main one is the banking account, because if you use two different names of your company, when the system starts verifying, it will have two different names. Mm-hmm. It's like you have two different IDs. When you go to the bank, they punch it in, it doesn't bring out your name. So it will reject it. The second one is that when you punch in your information, especially on the banking side, don't leave spaces in between, because the system will recognize that space as a character and read it as a character. And then you will say, look, the name is the same, but you left the spaces instead of using it as one word, then it will reject it. And the other one is that after every updating or changing of the information, you need to click your submit button, giving the system permission to start verifying your information. Because if you don't, the information will lay there dormant, it won't be verified. And the next thing, you come back, you have an RFQ, they tell you, but you're not compliant, your CSD hasn't ticked the boxes, only to find you didn't click the submit button to give the system permission to start verifying your information with other institutions.
Sis Rakhadi, you and I have had an amazing, amazing conversations. I suppose in this month of April, and, you know, we have touched on a number of issues, and I trust the province of Mpumalanga has heard us, you know, while you and I were conversating, and they, you know, they've fixed and rectified their mistakes in the process while you and I were having the conversation, because, you know, it'll be really interesting to see some of, you know, the service providers here in the province, you know, get to do business on the national front. I mean, like you said, there's no boundaries. It's one country after all. Yeah.
Yes, and thank you so much for even providing the podcast for the interviews.
Yeah.
So if they need these interviews, they can go check the podcast and just to see what is it that they have missed. Or otherwise, if they want information, they can go to the Treasury website under the OCPO. We do have the information that they need in terms of what are the instruction notes that are there now, What are we complying with at the moment? Where are we in terms of the rules and the regulations? So just to make sure they keep up with the changes that are happening in the system. So I hope they will give it a thought and put an effort into it.
Yeah.
Just the same way as those who are putting in effort and giving those tenders as well.
Definitely. Sister Khali, I really want to applaud you and thank you so much for having chosen us here in the province.
Thank you so much, and I hope you have a nice Freedom Day tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. Mpumalanga, Chief Director there in Stakeholder and Client Management at the National Treasuries, Ms. Rakgadi Motsetho, talking to us here on Rise FM in 60 Minutes. This conversation was definitely brought to you by the National Treasury. We have really appreciated having our good friends there from the National Treasury helping us, you know, around the simplifying the processes of doing business with government. And that's it for night, I suppose, for tonight. And thank you so much for having lent us your ears. And definitely tomorrow we're not back again because it's a holiday. You, you know, just reflect at some of, you know, the heroes and the heroines that have, you know, paid, you know, and even paved the way for us to be here today. Just reflect on them and see how then do you intend on playing a role in ensuring that the next generation looks at your work and your contributions in this day and time as such of a struggle hero. Really appreciate having you on our program this evening. Good night.